Brett, calling the USA, sitting here with Michael Goudeau. We're in Las Vegas, talking to New York, D.C., Chicago, all the really good cities, you know? That's the great thing. We have all the great cities that, you know, because we toured. Panatella toured for 30 years.
Yeah.
And it was always such a treat to go, you know, Chicago.
Right.
With, of course, the great Steve Dahl and my good friend Tony, Teddy, all the cats out there. And sure. I always love playing D.C., you know. So it's good.
Baltimore.
It's good. Baltimore. Baltimore's a great city.
I was surprised.
That's the first place
cool
I discovered Rock and Bowl.
Rock and Bowl.
Rock and Bowl. Rock and Bowl, yeah.
Rock and Bowl.
Yeah, they had this, I think I said it wrong, but that's what they have. They have this Rock and Bowl thing, which I went to. You know, I'd be touring in Balmer. See, I try to say Balmer, because every time I'd say Baltimore, they'd correct me, you know, and then they'd follow with Hun. It's Balmer, Hun. It's Balmer. So, you know, you got John Waters, half Japanese, you know, the great band Jad Fair and David Fair out of Baltimore. There's great, there were great punk clubs there when I played there. And we'd stay at the hotel, and then after the show, they'd have all-night rock and bowl, where they'd play, you know, loud rock and roll, and you'd bowl.
Right.
Hence the term rock and bowl.
Wow.
And so this, we're in a lot of good cities. When we get these, you know, I was talking yesterday about not getting feedback.
Uh-huh.
From people. We're used to having an audience, and we don't. And we are getting a lot of feedback. I mean, it's slow motion. It's Gmails. Penn Radio, P-E-N-N-R-A-D-I-O, PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. And we took a lot of calls yesterday. It felt like, you know, a real radio show.
Well,
we were
like
taking calls. Yeah.
We're talking about least favorite words.
Yeah, that really
went
well.
That's a real radio show.
That went well. That went well. 866-313-FREE. 866-313-FREE. 3733. When I say free like that, it probably confuses people more than if I just said free, right?
You seem to be doing that a lot, actually. We got a letter about...
my pronunciation?
Security Edition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Read that letter. The letter has an odd syntax to it.
Yeah, I'm like it's. Do you want me to read it that way, or do you want?
What do you want to do? You want to?
I was gonna, you know, kind of summarize.
Yeah, we talked about this idea that my friend Dean Cameron had, who I call Dino, but it's confusing. So Dean Cameron.
That wasn't the problem.
Who you may know from ski school and all those. What am I trying to? Summer school, where he played Chainsaw. But he's got his own movie out called Hollywood Palms that he wrote. You can get it on DVD, although it's not number two on the list.
Really?
Number two on the best selling list on Amazon is still The Aristocrats. Remember how excited I was when we were like at number six?
Now it's.
We're at number two.
Yeah, two. Still. We're still at two.
Okay. Yeah. And.
we have letters about that as well. We're. Waist deep in letters again today.
I know, and that's good. That means that somebody's listening. At least we have, there's clearly 50 people listening.
Yeah, so we get email from all 50 of them every day.
Yeah. And we get a lot of email from this guy named Bob the Skeptical
Bob
Christian.
Bob the Skeptical Christian.
But I don't want to go to that now. Don't reach for that. I was misdirecting you.
You threw me off.
What is this about security? So Dino came up with this thing because I just hate TSA. I hate our liberties going away.
Mm-hmm.
I hate all of that so much. I think that there are these slogans that were very important in the United States of America, like live free or die, give me liberty or give me death.
Sure.
And now it seems to be safety is the most important thing.
Yes, sir.
Even if I have to be felt up.
Take my nail clippers, please, is our new slogan.
Yeah, and, you know, I dropped my pants at one TSA in Mississippi or something. They were asking me to look at my belt and stuff and things like that, and I got a little bit miffed. And, you know, I'm. Would you say I'm pretty easygoing overall?
A little miffy.
I mean, I'm not as easygoing as you.
No.
You know, you haven't been in a bad mood since you were one angry juggler, right?
No, I have not. Not since that, yeah.
Goudeau was on a jury, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, everybody wanted to convict this guy?
Yeah, with no evidence, which was interesting. You know, if you're paying attention in a trial, it's, there was no evidence at all. They wanted to convict this guy, and the people were just, you know, look at his hair. You know, he's a black guy. He has cornrows. He's guilty. Throw him in jail.
They weren't really saying that.
They were very close to saying those exact things. And I was, you know, shut up. People, stop it.
Now, you didn't use that voice. That's like your cartoon dog
voice.
No,
I use that. That is my actual voice. This morning it is, anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, you sound like a cartoon dog a lot of the time.
Yeah, well, that's...
But, I mean, you use this kind of deeper voice.
Yes.
How'd you convince him? What did you do?
Stop. I just stalled. I went on for days and days, blithering... until they finally shut up and voted him. Well, they didn't actually let him go. After 2 days of deliberation and many hours of people calling me names, it finally got to about 10 not guilty and 2 guilty. There were two people who were, you know, I'm an attorney, and so I know everything, and that these guys guilty just because I can tell by looking at him. I mean, it really came down to that. There was so little evidence presented against this poor fella.
And you said you were right in people's faces.
We were yelling and screaming and crying for 2 days. And finally, the judge...
You weren't sequestered.
No,
you
no,
went
we
home to your wife.
Still went home and had a pleasant evening.
And then you went right back to
right
giggling.
Back in the morning and back to giggling.
You were giggling all night, though, and happened.
Yeah, exactly. Still went in and did my goofy juggling show. You know, I'm defending freedom and doing a juggling show. It's a perfect combination.
What we're all trying to do.
After 2 days of deliberation, the judge called us all in and said, I apologize for making you guys debate this way. The DA wanted to try the case in this way, and I suggested that they didn't, but because there was no evidence to convict him. And I looked at the other people, and no one said, we are so sorry, thank you for saving this innocent man's life. It was awful. It was a pain in the butt.
But when he said there was no evidence, you should go, na 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 na. Did you like one of those Cartman dances?
I did not. I was gracious. I was gracious.
You're gracious, thy name is Godot.
Yes, I was.
I try to be good-natured. I think jugglers, as a rule, are good-natured. There aren't many.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess there's Jason Garfield, but there aren't many sour.
Other than that, they're all cheery.
Pretty cheery. Passing Zone is cheery. Scotty's pretty cheery.
We work about 15, 20 minutes a night. Most jugglers, so as a lot, we're very cheery.
Well, my juggling part of the Penn & Teller show is 15 minutes with about 30 seconds of juggling. You got to set these things up.
You have a special
up.
Skill.
Yeah, I juggle broken bottles, so I have to set it up. You have to explain to people how hard it is. But, so I sometimes, this is why we stopped touring, really. I mean, one of the reasons, you know, the Rio here in Vegas had been tugging on our coat to do a full-time show here in Vegas. And I love being on the road. I just adore it. I love it because, you know, you can just go back to your same friends and girlfriends every 2 years. And then you're there for 2 weeks, and you get a few arguments, and then you go away, and you come back, and it's all okay. Uh-huh. When you stay in one place, you know, I think it was, Bob Dylan, who said, nothing follows you out on the road, you know. But when you're in one place, things follow you. You know, you have the same friends show up all the time.
Yeah, like
but
me.
every
morning.
Every morning. But I really felt like I had to get off the road because going through security and seeing them toss old ladies and treat them really badly broke my heart and made me really sour. Mm-hmm. So I was going through one place, and it was like Alabama or someplace. It was someplace in the South that someone from New England, like a real Yankee, doesn't even know the name of. Like to me, if I drew the country a map of the United States, I would be really good on like Maine, you know, Rhode Island, Illinois. I could do Minnesota, California, no problem. But get down into that, you know, I could do Texas, Louisiana. But when you get over to like Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, all the same states.
That's where I'm from. I can do that for you. Together we can draw a map.
So I was down in one of those states that I don't understand. And they asked me to check my belt, you know, and our whole crew is freedom fighters, you know. The guys in the shop, you know, we have Nate, Michael, and Zeke, who are the guys who really make the show go. I mean, if you wanted to know about how the Penn & Teller show is done, you don't want to talk to me. It's like talking to Ronald McDonald about how to make burgers. You know, you want to talk to people that actually do it.
Sure.
These are the geniuses behind Penn & Teller, and they're real freedom fighters, you know. Yeah. So we're on the road. And I go through, and I want to look at my belt, so I drop my pants. I just pull my pants down, right? And I'm wearing boxer shorts. And then right away, the woman at the TSA calls the police. And these are the real police, not the leather sniffer TSA police, but the real police. And now I'm being busted for exposing myself.
Uh-huh.
So I try to explain to her that if I exposed myself, she would know it. I was actually wearing boxer shorts. But the great thing about it is, as I walk over into the little area to meet the real cop, three cell phones get thrown to me from our crew. And one cell phone has Nadine Strossen, who was at that time president of the ACLU, or shortly past president, Bob Corn Revere, who's a big First Amendment attorney, and then a friend of mine, Noreen, who was an attorney. So I had three cell phones with three cops, attorneys on them, ready to take the case. And I said to the... police officer, I said, you know, I'm your worst nightmare. I have a few days off. I have a lot of money, and freedom is my hobby. You know, so I so wanted to be busted. You know, and that's when you know. That's when you know you've crossed some sort of line. I have a good friend in Chicago, Tony Fitzpatrick. Everybody in Chicago, probably everybody in the country, should know him. But everybody in Chicago certainly knows Tony. And Tony was a heavyweight boxer when he was younger, and he said that he quit boxing when he realized that he was going into the ring in order to be beat up. That's what he was looking forward to. And, you know, and that was the feeling. I was going through airport security looking forward to being busted.
Right.
You know, I wanted the conflict.
You were in the mood.
I wanted cops to push me around.
It was probably early in the morning.
I put a couple lawyers on the phone with a cop and was still yelling. And the cop said, you can go. And I went, no, I want to fight. You can go. And I go, we're going to take you right to your gate and we'll put you right on if you have to wait in line. I went, but he said, you cannot force me to arrest you. Here's a reasonable guy. And of course, you know, every police officer that I know, like that's a real police officer that does real police work, they seem to dislike TSA more than I do. They just see them as leather sniffers, you know, wannabes, bureaucrats.
You're never getting on another plane.
Never.
It's a good thing you're not traveling.
I'm not traveling a lot now.
Let's hope they're all working.
So Dean Cameron, who's a big, big freedom fighter, got the idea of making a card about the size of a playing card that is the Bill of Rights and is printed on metal. So it sets it off. And it's a little performance art thing you do where when you go through and it beeps and they go, do you have any metal on you? You go, here, take my rights. And you talk. And they never get it. It doesn't mean anything. But it's a really fun thing to have. And the ACLU bought a million billion of them. And this guy writes in and wants. He says he's been looking for security edition.
He can't seem to find it.
Right. And how's he spelling edition?
ADDIDION.
Well, this is probably my accent, you know, because I do have a Western Massachusetts accent. The only two people I really think talk properly, professionally, are Sarah Silverman and... Adam Sandler.
Okay.
Both from New Hampshire.
Right, sure.
Both from where I hear him. Both have the urge to say New Hampshire instead of New Hampshire.
Thomas, it's Security Edition, E-D.
E-D. E-D-I-T.
Oh, we're giving you technical on me, are you? Edition, you know, not addition.
Edition. Probably
the first edition.
And that's Dean Cameron's securityedition.com. You don't have to put Dean Cameron on top of it, just
securityedition.com.
And you can buy these things that will get you in
trouble.
Get
a case of them.
Get you in trouble when you go through.
What a good idea.
I don't know why. I don't know why that's so important to me, but it is. How was your show last night? Good morning, Teller.
Good morning, Lance.
Always have to put that in there. Our two bosses you always have to talk to. How was your show last night?
It was great. Another perfect show.
Really?
Yeah, 620 without a drop.
Yeah, me too. Never make a mistake. But, you know, we were back. We'd been back last night. So,
right.
So, I mean, the night before. So last night was nothing. Just
second
easy.
Second show right month, yeah.
Yeah, the second show back is just
amazing. Yeah. All the words are fresh. Everything's exciting.
Yeah.
Things could go wrong.
Fingers are getting a little better from the, the bass playing. It's good.
Good.
And Nadine Strossen didn't show up. She was
just
in town.
To show up?
She was in town for this TAM, the amazing meeting, the skeptics meeting. She's in town for that, and I believe she had tickets. I got an email that said she had tickets to our show, but she didn't show up. And I love Nadine. You know, Nadine Strossen, when she was head of the ACLU, I have some beefs with the ACLU.
Yeah, a lot of people think the ACLU is just bad, and we should talk about that.
But we have different beefs than everybody else.
Sure.
The beef most people have is, you know, why would they defend Nazis? Why do racists have rights? I think that's too easy an argument
right.
to do. You know?
Sure.
My problem is that they go into this this kind of stuff that isn't pure freedom to me. You know, stuff like people's rights to complain in the workplace and stuff. And I'm just a free market freak. I just think that you have, you know, the government that governs least governs best. I really believe that. So when the ACLU wants to put more laws in, I tend to disagree. But when Nadine Strossen was head of it, it was just so boss. Because she was the first person. You know, the ACLU usually does this thing where they say, you know, I don't want to read pornography. I don't want to read, you know, the horrible racist books,
right.
You know, the Timmy McVeigh stuff.
Sure.
You know, I don't want to read that, but it's good that it's out there. It's a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
And Nadine Strossen was the first one to come out and go, not only should it be legal, but also I kind of like to read it.
<That's>
She really
great.
Did. She really did say that.
Good
she was really, and I thought that was a huge shift. for freedom fighters to say, not only is it okay to have this, but also I might want to pick up something from the Klan and read it. I mean, that might be something, who knows what my reasons are, but I want it out there. I want to be able to read it. And Nadine Strossen, this was back in New York City. I lived in New York for years and years. We played on Broadway, and I dug New York like anybody digs New York. It was just the greatest. And that's back when they had, you know, Show World and Peopleland, and there was no Disney on 42nd Street. And she had just argued in front of the Supreme Court that topless dancing was okay. Uh-huh. Right, and so I called Nadine and congratulated her, and then asked her, how many times have you been to topless bars, to nude bars? And Nadine said that she had been to one in college, but had never been to one since. So she had been arguing at the Supreme Court about topless dancing and hadn't seen it. So I did this, and I do these things, and you know, right, me long enough.
Sure.
I do these performance art things that aren't for anybody. They're just for me. They're just these goofy things. So I called up Nadine and made a date to try to take her to the places in New York City at that time. This is the late 80s.
Right.
Places in New York City that would make her, change her mind about fighting for nude dancing. I wanted to see if I could bring her places.
You take her to the worst ones.
So I took her
to try to scare it out of her.
I took her to the transsexual ones, the transvestite ones. I took her to places where lap dances were, at minimum, a euphemism. I took her to talk to a live nude girl. And we spent the whole evening. I mean, I think I picked her up at like 8, and then we were like out to like 3 in the morning. And we went everywhere, everywhere you could go, and really, really bad places. I mean, really places where you see, you know, naked junkies having sex with one another. And then we would go in, and we would sit down in these places that smell of Clorox,
sure,
for two reasons. And we would sit there, and she would look up on the stage, and there'd be this incredibly sexual thing going on. And I'd say, should this be allowed? And she'd go, yes. I go, let's go. Leave. She'd go, no, I want to see a little more. Let's go. We're done. And I took her all over the place, and it was really wonderful because we were in one of these booths with Talk to a Live Nude Girl, which,
right,
is an incredible euphemism. You don't just talk. You sit behind the booth. And we forced both of us in there. We went in as a couple, right? And the woman, you have a phone. For those,
sure,
who haven't been in there, you have a phone. Of course, sure, you know, but not everybody does. You have a phone to be able to talk.
It's got to be plastic to keep you from getting to the girl, right?
Right.
Under glass.
Yeah, right. So you have a little phone. And the woman who's nude that we're going to talk to, that's going to do a little show for us, says to us, well, you know, I can't really say some of this. And Nadine grabs the phone away from me and goes, why can't you say it? Who's told you you can't say it? Why don't you have freedom of speech? Freedom of speech extends to this booth. Don't you know that? And it was like, what? What kind of weird kink is this? What kind of weird kink that a guy brings in a lawyer with a briefcase to sit and talk to a live nude girl? And I took the phone back and said, you know, I talk for a living. And if you talk and I talk and we both bill, it's going to at best be break even. So it was three people in a glass booth, one of us nude.
All of you professional speakers.
All of us professional speakers. And it was a wonderful experience. I mean, going smutting with the head of the ACLU was just, and she told me this thing, which I probably, every day on the Big Ben Gillette Show, there should be one thing I say that really should not be said.
Okay.
Yesterday it was covered easily, you know, taking the vomit comment, all the,
right,
all the kind of quasi-legal things I've done.
Sure.
But I probably shouldn't say this, but Justice Souter, you know, of the Supreme Court, when Nadine Strossen told him that we were going to go out to all these strip clubs, she,
right,
told, if the idea that you're just chatting with a justice blows my mind, when she told him that we were going out, Justice Souter asked if he could come along. So I got a phone call saying to me, hi, Penn, this is Nadine. You know, we're going to all those strip clubs and sex shows tonight. Would it be okay? And then she called by his first name, which I don't even know. Would it be okay if so-and-so, Justice Souter came along with us, and my jaw just drops. I like flip. And so when I go to pick her up, I half expect Justice Souter to be there,
sure,
in the robes and the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And she said that he felt that some people would recognize him and that he probably shouldn't go. Would anybody in any strip club in any place in the United States recognize any justice of the Supreme Court ever? It's dark.
Of course
and
they would.
Everyone there looks exactly like Justice Souter, and they all have the robes on, but in this case, for practical reasons, not for ceremonial. This is Penn Jillette on the Big Free FM. We'll be back right after this. That's the Mike Jones Big Orchestra playing the Pendulette theme there. This is Pendulette, snap your fingers. Sitting here with Michael Goudeau, just two jugglers talking about stuff. You know, I've my whole life I've done these goofy little adventures, like taking the head of the ACLU out smutting.
Right.
And you know, fighting with TSA, and I never realized why I was doing it. Now,
now you know.
I was coming all to this radio show, and someone wrote in, you people are so kind, at penradio@gmail.com. Goudeau and I read every single Gmail we get. So
we do.
And Goudeau answers some of them, you know, directly.
Almost all of them.
Some of them we answer on the air. And someone wrote in very kindly and said they wanted to hear my blow dryer story. And the blow dryer story I've told on the radio, I think, once before.
Right.
Not on this show.
Apparently 15 years ago
in Chicago. Yeah. And the blow dryer story is among my friends, I think, the most requested story. You know, after the show, a lot of times, you know, Jonesy will say, tell the blow dryer story. So I will, on the air, tell the blow dryer story, but not now. Not now.
We have a lot to get to today.
We have a lot to get to today, and also the blow dryer story, I need to really think it out ahead of time so that I don't offend anybody.
Sure.
Because the subject matter of the blow dryer story is a bit, shall we say, close to the bone.
Okay.
So I want to be very careful so that no one is bothered by that. Number two! Number two! Aristocrats is still number two on Amazon!
Excellent.
I want to be pretty aware of what I'm going to do on the way.
And what happened there?
I don't know. I looked down at my notes, and it said Aristocrats number two, and I just checked that. I'm doing a...
you know, Bob sent us some ways to try to get it to number one. Bob the Skeptical Christian?
Now, that's first of all, we haven't read anything by him, but we get something
we
from...
We've read a couple things.
Almost every day, we get a few
Bob
epistles.
Bob writes those a lot.
A few epistles from... And I love that signature, Bob the Skeptical Christian.
Sure.
I think Bob must listen all the time. So go ahead, read what Bob wrote.
It's so funny you'll forget to eat. That's what he says your slogan should be.
Oh, wait, we have to set it up.
All right.
This
is
Comedy 101.
Why not market the Aristocrats?
Quiet.
You
quiet.
Set it up.
No, I'll set it up.
And Bob will do the punchline.
Bob will do the punchline. We are number two on Amazon, as I mentioned. The Aristocrats, this movie that we did that's 104 comedians telling the same dirty joke. And it's filthy vulgar. That's important to know. And the number one,
You can't listen to this show and not have heard that a million times. Thank you for recapping.
No, but that's not the important part. The important part is the number one DVD on Amazon is The Biggest Loser Workout. It's this jive television, you know, now everybody's going to be thin workout is number one. So now, what does Bob the Skeptical Christian have to say?
Bob says, you should put this on the cover. In fact, you should put anything on the cover. It's so funny, you'll forget to eat. He suggests it could be a weight loss. Or one look at the cover will make you want to throw up, was his other suggestion.
So anorexia and bulimia, both pushed by,
by
the Aristocrats DVD and Bob the Skeptical Christian.
Bob's all over it today. He's sad we've lost the phrase, is the Pope Polish? So Bob's had a bad day.
I like Bob, and I just love that he signs Bob the Skeptical Christian. Robbie Libben, a friend of us all, Mr. Robbie Libben, has written in this, which I read and really laughed hard. Robbie reports the news and then gives us a little bit of his own comments in this. So I'm just reading this word for word what Robbie has written. A lawsuit by millionaire John Gilmore has revealed, and this is astonishing. This is astonishing, and ties in what we were saying earlier. A lawsuit by millionaire John Gilmore has revealed that secret regulations allow passengers to fly without identification as long as they submit to body and luggage searches. A three-judge panel decided to review the government's secret regulations in private, as making them public would compromise national security. Legal scholars applauded the panel's ability to announce that decision with a straight face. That's Robbie Libben's comment on our loss of freedom. Always witty, always fighting for freedom. Always a freedom fighter, Robbie Libben. I'm doing, after I finish up here, I'm heading over to the Stardust.
The amazing meeting.
Not the Stardust that just came back from outer space.
Well, thank you.
I'm not heading over to there, but the casino.
You're going to go over your telescope, take a little look at the dust.
Which is called the Stardust.
Yes.
It will be blown up by the end of the year, because that's what we do things in Vegas. Things get a little old, we blow them up. It's easy as that. Wayne Newton is scheduled to be blown up.
Along with it.
Yeah. And we're going to go over, I'm going to go over the Stardust, and there's a Q&A. That I have to do. You know, it's a Q&A with Penn Jillette. So there's like, these guys going to be amazing meeting. They're going to see Christopher Hitchens, Murray Gell-Mann, who got the Nobel Prize,
physics
along
man.
with Feynman, Amazing Randy, Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., all these incredible speakers. And one
Dennett,
of the things,
Daniel Dennett.
Daniel Dennett. Daniel Dennett is here. Last year, Dawkins, really heavy, heavy organization. And in the afternoon, one of the things you get treated to is a Q&A with Penn Jillette.
Because out of that list, that's the question we want to ask.
Yeah. I was called by a good friend of mine, Mark Garland. He called me the non-thinking man's Richard Feynman. I think that's what I aspire to. And they'll ask me questions. And Jonesy, Mike Jones,
yeah,
the phenomenal piano. Jazz piano player, not the rapper, but the piano player. Not the hip-hop guy, the piano player. Fabulous bebop piano player. And also plays with the Penn and Teller show. Jonesy said to me last night, I think a really important observation. He said that all Q&As were exactly the same. He does these jazz cruises where they go on. I guess you have to be outside the 2-mile limit now to play jazz in this country. But people go on cruises and pay money, and all these jazz greats. They just listen to jazz and then eat all the time, which is what you do on cruises. And he said that they have Q&As. And he said, I think it's the exact same questions, except you
there's
replace...
a template.
There's a template for all the questions. You just replace the word jazz with the word skepticism. So it's, where will skepticism be in 10 years? How do we get more young people interested in skepticism? Can we get skepticism into the schools? Same thing. Can we get jazz into the schools? How do we get more young people involved in jazz? And I thought about this, and probably every Q&A is the same. How do we get more minorities involved in fly fishing? How do we get barbecue into the schools? The same question. And I realize that is the reason to become president of the United States of America, because the Q&As only at that level do the Q&As become slightly different, because then you go, Mr. President, why are you bombing another country into oblivion? You don't get, why are you bombing is probably a question I get today. Why are you bombing on bullshot, Penn? I'm now comfortable just saying bullshot or bullshit.
That. You just said wow, right out.
Yeah, because I also figured most people watch on TiVo, or they do something on their TV, they go through the guide or something.
Sure.
And it always says, Penn and Teller bulls.
B-U-L-L-S.
No, star. It just runs out of space.
Okay.
And I'm always worried when it says Penn and Teller Bulls, because I'm always afraid that they think that we're challenging the Chicago Bulls to basketball.
Not that it's the rodeo. Not National Finals rodeo.
That was the great
Penn
thing.
Penn and Teller on the National Finals rodeo.
I went to the rodeo, right? Rodeo?
I know.
And I have this horrible, view of I'm such a stereotyper. I'm a bad person. So I just think the rodeo is going to be filled with people with cowboy hats who want to beat me up, that they're all going to hate me, because I'm going over there with my wife.
Sure.
But I look like me,
The long hair.
A lot of rodeo guys have long hair, but just my general carriage and just the way I look and my bone structure, and I'm just the kind of person that I
just
feel
the bone structure that cowboys should dislike.
Yeah, that a cow puncher would also be a pen puncher, right? So I kind of, and I also know that we do
a little cowish,
the stereo
feeling bovine,
the stereotype, right? Is that people who would go to the rodeo would be Bible belters, And I know that we've done a lot of shows on Penn and Teller Bullshot on Showtime that they might not approve of.
Sure.
In my stereotype, only in my stereotype, because in reality, man, I was a superstar there, It was like Travis Tritt was walking around, whoever that is.
Well, perhaps it is the bovine thing. It could be a plus.
They all wanted.
You thought it was a negative, and yet
they all wanted to rope me and hog tie me and throw me down in 2.5 seconds. 2.5 seconds is not even right. It's like It's like 0.3
They're
seconds.
Faster.
They're fast. But the reason we did the PETA show.
We did
the show that trashed PETA, and it turns out that these are the alliances that we formed. The rodeo people, who I now have a whole new respect for, because they like me.
And that's what matters in
that's what matters in my
the big
world.
Scheme.
In the big scheme, they like me. And the thing is, to them, hating PETA, disliking PETA, is more important than loving God.
What?
And that is the wonderful thing. And my stereotype is entirely changed. I now see a guy in a cowboy hat, and I think, woohoo! There is a Penn and Teller bullshot fan. He's a friend. He's a brother. We'll be back. We're on, what are we on? Free FM. Free FM all over the country. In case you can't tell, it's Penn Jillette. And I'm here with Michael Gutto on a Friday. Time to tell the yeah, long-term jazz cruise Q&A answerer, Mike Jones, playing piano on that track and also wrote it. That's the Pendulette theme, and I'm playing bass. And we got Gmails up to our neck. We love Gmails because they are always fresh. The phone calls we never seem to get to. But penradio@gmail.com, we're back here next week. We can even use them then. So you can't tell how far back we're going to go. We haven't forgotten any Gmails. We're going to be going the whole rest of the time. The last day we're on the air, we'll read some email from the first week that we got.
I'm sure we will.
What are we getting now? What's coming in now?
Ted in New York City says, Penn, do you ever get hate calls from the celebrities you lambast? And his example is Wayne Newton.
Did I lambast Wayne Newton? I mean, I talked about Shane. I talked about Donkey Shane.
No, earlier today you said you wanted him. You didn't say you wanted him. You said he would be blown up along with the Stardust.
Oh, yeah, I did say that. Yeah. You know, I really don't.
I don't think that was negative.
I really don't. I have had arguments, you know, backstage
right.
with people that have, that they think I'm a nut. You know,
really?
Usually about skepticism or atheism or some sort of libertarian thing. You know, when the Democrats were all, you know, lousy, it was kind of Trey Parker, Matt Stone, me and Teller huddled in a corner, not agreeing with Hollywood about, you know, anybody but. But I can't think of too many people that are angry. Elle McPherson.
but has she called in?
No, she hasn't called in. Mm-hmm. Elle McPherson got really mad at me for a show I did in Chicago where I accused her her boyfriend or husband or whatever of wearing a dickie. I accused him of wearing a dickie.
Right.
You know, a
false
turtleneck.
That was beeped out, even though it's not.
No, it wasn't. It was
no,
a dickie.
I understand.
It wasn't bleeped out.
I'm trying to keep it from being bleeped out.
Okay, the false turtleneck. There's no other term for it.
Okay,
dickie. I accused him of wearing the dickie, and I thought that I would just go over and unbutton his shirt. You know,
sure.
He was a small French guy, and I thought I'd go over and unbutton his shirt, and we'd see it was a real turtleneck, and I'd say, hey, it's, you know, it's my fault.
You were
fault.
Trying to make yourself look foolish, and...
And he was wearing a dickie. Sometimes you get lucky.
Did you win the $1 million prize from Randy?
So I went over and I opened his shirt in front of everybody, and there's just this flap of cloth. And she was... And, of course, we had a live audience in Chicago for this radio show, and the audience was joyous about him actually wearing a dickie.
Somehow they thought you had seen him naked backstage in just the dickie? I don't understand.
Well, they were thrilled. Big American busts French guy on wearing a dickie when he is Elle McPherson's date. I mean, I think that's hero stuff.
That's hero stuff.
I think that's, you know, that's you know, that's Alan Shepard. You know what I mean?
You made the leap and you landed in the right spot.
I made it. It was
amazing.
Astonishing. And I didn't really expect to win.
Of
so I was already to kind
of,
I had my whole shtickle already to kind of say, you know, I've been downtrodden. And boy, Elle McPherson gave me a look that I think I will never forget. And then on we did Fear Factor, and I was
I've seen this one.
Yeah, I was on with Gina.
Gina Lee Nolan. Didn't she cry? She make Gina Lee Nolan cry?
I made her cry, yeah. And when she was crying on air, I thought this was acting,
right.
A joke.
Sure.
Fine. So I thought, well, we're doing really well together.
Oh, that's great.
This
sure.
little improv piece we're doing together.
Man, we're working.
And it never crossed my mind that she wasn't that good of an actress.
Uh-huh.
Actor, I guess you must say. That good of an actor. So when the camera stopped rolling and she left crying with her mother in a limo, they all yelled at me for making Gina Lee Nolan cry. So Elle McPherson hating me, Gina Lee Nolan cry. And then Pamela Anderson.
Sure. Well,
she was on Sin City, and we got in a little tiff about animal rights that turned into me making a very cruel joke about her.
At her expense, yes.
At her expense.
I was there.
About her...
And had spent several hours waiting for her to show up to do this thing, so...
And I made a
although
joke.
Although the cruel joke might be offensive to some, those of us who had spent 4 hours waiting for her to show up.
And it was a joke. I'm not going to do the joke.
No, you don't
need to. Because it's not right. But it was a joke about her pornographic film that was out,
sure.
home movie that was
sure.
out. Made it on the air, and we showed it in our show. And so those three women, although Gina Lee Nolan, since then, we have we've exchanged emails, and she's
you,
fine.
You made up with her?
She's a really good person.
You know, Terry Garr and I have never made up.
Yeah. Godot set a mousetrap off on Terry Garr's
face, yeah.
Tongue. On
yeah.
the tongue, right?
On her tongue, yeah.
Yeah, put a mouse.
Yeah, she's mad about that. Probably still.
I don't blame her.
I don't blame her at all.
Yeah.
It was my fault, and I apologize.
But when we, you know, our daughter, Moxie, mm-hmm. you know, my wife is pregnant again, but our daughter, Moxie, who's 7 months old, she is a test tube baby.
Yes.
We did IVF.
Right.
And the new baby is not. The new baby gets $35,000 more than Moxie.
In the will?
Because that's how much cheaper the baby was. We just had sex.
The old-fashioned way.
Simple, easy, hey. Cheap. Cheap. Sex is cheap.
Some people can make babies this way.
Sure, we did.
I couldn't. But my wife and I didn't. We adopted.
Yeah. See, the first time around, we thought sex was too icky. But it's really not that bad. It's pretty okay. And saves you $35,000. But when you do, for Moxie, not for just Moxie, you can really name your child anything when you do IVF. But we went in and, you know, the woman has to get a zillion shots.
Sure.
You know, I was shooting her up with these huge needles every night.
You did that. Yes.
Yeah. It's astonishing. And we like
your wife a shot of hormones every night at 7 p.m.
But my wife being the best human being on the planet,
right.
She would get in these like moods where she'd cry and get angry, and we'd just laugh about it.
Right.
Because she was so aware that it was, you know, the hormones and because we were trying to have a baby. And all I have to do, the one thing I have to do, is to go into a room
right.
and produce sperm. That's
right.
all I have to do. And they have this little room. And I'm trying to avoid, they busted me on a word that I thought was rather clinical. But I have to go into to a room. And
a private room.
Yeah. And I have to produce a sample. That's what they say.
Produce a sample.
And the room that they have, okay, has posters on the wall that are supposed to inspire you
right,
to produce
sure.
a sample. So
good
I walk in,
women.
And this is absolutely true, right? I walk in with my little vial, right?
Right.
And my wet nap and all the tools they give you. I walk in the room, right? And this is to make a baby,
sure,
right?
Sure.
This is important.
This is supposed to arouse
you. And this is also a skill that I've had since I was 12.
Right.
Right? Nothing. There's no way.
You're well prepared for this.
No way a human being, a man, no way a man can screw this up. It's impossible. Impossible to screw this up. I walk into, and I'm serious. And I'm not doing shtick, man. I just walk in. I've got my little bottle. I've got everything. I walk in. I look around the wall, and what is on the poster on the wall? Al McPherson, Gina Lee Nolan, Pam Anderson, looking at me, going, "You're going to reproduce? You scum!
I think you're adding that part.
Human junk."
I don't think they were talking.
No,
it was just posters.
Right.
They were smiling.
And the heart wasn't beating in Poe's Telltale Heart either.
Okay.
All right.
This is a psychological thriller.
My life is a psychological thriller.
So it took a while to fill the vial.
Well, I was very freaked out. And then,
the canyon of hate.
And I call EZ in, my wife, Emily. I call her in. I say, all the women on the walls hate me. And she, of course, thinks that that what I mean is there's some sort of weird, you know, some reading Playboy when I was a kid, and that this is metaphorical, you know, that I'm talking about the airbrushed model in our culture hates
right.
me. And I go, no, these actual human beings dislike me. And I suppose to some people, that's more of a turn-on. But
it wasn't working for you, huh?
It wasn't working at all. And, you know, there they are being so beautiful and sexy.
Sure,
and
just come hither.
Wonderful people.
Lovely photos.
And all I can see when I look up at their faces is this, like, you know, the raw hate follows me
just
around
tears.
The room. Like,
just
in a
tears
wonderful...
running down the face of them. It's
Well, Gina Lee Nolan I made cry. And I mean, really cry. And when she left Fear Factor... And, you know, my sister calls me and says, she loved me on Fear Factor.
Right.
You were great. She says, you know, that Gina Lee is a great actor.
You didn't blow it for her, did you?
Yeah.
No, you did.
I kind of did. And then, you know, my sister, my, you know how loyal my sister is? We're having this discussion
right.
about... With my sister at the terrorist Starbucks here
sure.
in Vegas where they plan the, where they plan at least part of the attacks. And a bunch of my friends are out with my sister and, we're talking about, what's his name? Kaczynski.
Ted Kaczynski, sure. The Unabomber.
Yeah, the Unabomber. And we're talking about what a hard decision it would be for
to turn in your brother.
To turn in your brother.
Sure.
And we're having this whole discussion, right?
Right.
And I said, you know, to know that and how hard that must be to finally come forward. And my sister, and I mean, this sums up my sister right away. It's, you know, and I'm close to crying saying this. She says, I would never turn you in no matter what. she just says that matter of fact, you know, no matter what you did. And so all my friends try to jump in and say, you know, what if he did this,
right,
and this, making up crimes. And my sister just goes, no, I would never do that. And it was this explanation of love and loyalty that it never crossed my mind that was so pure. To me, it had always been an intellectual idea.
Right.
And she just made it completely real and emotional. So I can tell my sister that I made Gina Lee Nolan cry. And she goes,
she thinks no less of you?
Well, she should be a professional. I mean, that's all, you know, that's all. Boom. She just totally on my side no matter what. And I think, you know, when all is said and done, I had a good friend, one of the finest magicians in the world, close-up magicians, and one of the closest friends I ever had, Jerry Camaro.
Sure.
And anybody who knew Jerry just loved him.
Jerry, yes.
He used to ride with the Huns. He was a real tough guy. Did time in prison, knifed, you know, 7 times, stabbed 3 times. Total tough guy. Now just a sweetheart.
Changed.
And I loved
a changed
him.
Changed man.
Changed man, and I just loved him, you know, and we would have talks about loyalty. And he would tell me that I had to change my point of view. My point of view of loyalty and love before my sister's, you know, 50 years of love for me sunk in, and before Jerry Camaro's idea of loyalty sunk in, I used to think that you made decisions about your friends and loved ones. You know, whether you were loyal to an idea, whether you were loyal to a person. And I'm not giving Jerry, you know, any sort of near the credit of my sister.
Right.
My sister is everything.
Sure.
But Jerry would articulate in a different way. You know,
sure.
You could not say anything bad about Penn and Teller around Jerry. End of story.
Sure.
Same thing with Tony Fitzpatrick
in
Chicago. You know, you can go up to Tony and go and say, you know, Tony, I saw Penn and Teller on Letterman last night. Not their strongest bit. And you're in trouble. Tony is not buying the Starbucks that day. You know,
that's it.
You know,
it's over.
He no longer hits. Tony no longer hits. You know, Tony used to be a prize fighter, used to be a pretty violent guy, but now he has a wife and he has kids and he loves them and he will not violate that.
Sure.
So you don't get smacked if you say that, but there is a coldness.
You buy your own coffee.
Buy your own coffee, yeah. And I think that's the kind of loyalty loyalty you should have. So my sister has that kind of loyalty, so I know that after I do something that other people would find maybe crossing a line,
sure,
like making Gina Lee Nolan cry on national TV, I can call my sister, and she'll just go.
She's okay with that. Okay, well, as long as we're talking about that.
She would not turn in Teddy Kay.
We have a letter that asks you, is it true that Copperfield is twins? Now, as long as we're talking about loyalty and about friendship. And
Copperfield has always been,
sisters?
Always been kind to me, always been good to me, and I've always been mean to him.
But just for laughs. I mean, that'll take
years. Always for laughs. And that's the thing that, you know, professionals do understand. Except Gina Lee Nolan, Al McPherson, Pam Anderson.
Pat Sajak.
Pat Sajak. No, we're fine, Pat.
Okay.
But Copperfield is not twins. Copperfield is one guy who's a very talented magician. There is a magician who works who is one of twins.
I know who you're
and
talking about.
You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
And I'm gonna even say who it is. A rather famous magician.
Uh-oh.
Not Chris Angel, not David Blaine.
Yeah, this letter is from Chris Angel, by the way.
not Teller, but a very famous magician, and once he had a terrible accident on stage.
Not my boss. It ain't Lance.
It ain't Lance. And his twin brother ran out to save him, and the audience saw this incredible thing where they're watching a magic show, a guy gets injured, they're all cheering, and all of a sudden a twin comes out, and that was the night, it was, maybe you haven't heard of him, oh, this is Penn Jillette, we'll be back next time, Penn Jillette and Michael Goudeau in Las Vegas.
What's the name?
That's, damn.